G'day trendsetters, welcome to episode 751 of the Trainsmove podcast. My name is Tim Meek, and if you have a question for the show, jump on through to the website trainsmove.com. Or if you don't want to be, you know, hassling around the website, forget that, wipe that like a dirty bum, jump onto your email machines, tim@trainsmove.com. Now, it's been a little while since I've jumped on, did an episode. So, last episode, I made mention that I had a calf strain. And the biggest surprise from all that was the amount of people that actually reached out to me via email or social media or whatever. That took me by surprise, big time. I just didn't think that amount of people really gave too much of a crap about us. And then two, not only did they give a crap about us, they actually spent their own time sending me a message. So that took me by surprise. I was very appreciated by all that. So thank you very much for those people that did that. It was very, very, very thoughtful. But turns out I don't have a calf strain at all. Yes. A very, very, very quick brief of what happened for the people that didn't listen to the last episode. I had a rest day. It was my first day rest day in a while. Training that day, I went for a crap swim, a crap bike ride. I was supposed to do a structured run that evening. I was feeling crap, and so I didn't even bother about doing a structured run. I just went out and kept the miles. Basically, it was supposed to be 14k aerobic. Oh, I just turned it into a 14k aerobic run. And about 12k's into it, I felt this pinch on my calf, and so I more or less walked home. And I, for 3-4 days after that, I was treating this calf like I've got a calf strain. And work, unfortunately, with work, I had to do an unusual amount of walking, and all that walking was done in steel cap boots. And it was getting worse, and it was getting worse, and it was getting bloody worse. So what I did is, I'm thinking, mate, there's no signs of this improving. With what I'm doing to this calf, there should be clear signs that there's clear progress of recovery, clear progress of healing this bloody thing. And so I start jumping onto the computer, and I remember listening to a story and years ago, and I shouldn't work off memory, but it was Pete Jacobs, back in the day when Pete Jacobs was Pete Jacobs. And he talked about he'd get these calf injuries, and he would treat them as a calf injury. But the actual real issue was up near his shoulder. I think that's what it was, but because I'm, again, working off memory. Anyway, so I thought, maybe this isn't a calf strain that I've got. Maybe it's something else. So I'm doing all this research, and I've got about five different things that it could be, maybe. And then I start reading up more on the pyrophemus syndrome, and I'm thinking, I think this is it here. I think I've got that's me. And so the pyrophemus, which right where the glute is sending every time I move, it's going down the sciatic nerve, hitting my calf. And I'm thinking, right, well, I'll start targeting that. And the very next day, I started getting these huge improvements. I was all of a sudden walking around with, because I'm not exaggerating this at all, but every single walking step I took, I was getting my calves would twitch, like it was something's, you know, severely off in my calf. Every pedal stroke I took on the bike, my calf would go, and to the point where for me to keep cycling, I'd had to raise my ankle an inch or two. And ideally, that, you know, clearly that's not ideal, but you could think, oh, I can get around, I'll do this for a little while, and I'll keep rehabbing it, and she'll be all apples. And so, but it wasn't working. But as soon as I started targeting pyrophemus, it started, you know, cupping. I first started cupping it, and all up my back and stuff. And I went to the physio, and I'm describing to him who's a dead ringer of Christian Blumenfeld too, even sounded like him. And I'm saying, going through, and he thought it was the calf. He didn't think I was right until I kept talking and, you know, drowning him out, and he actually thought, well, maybe this bald-headed turd's onto something. And so he started treating it, and it's got getting better and better and better. And so we're going twice a week for a couple of weeks, and it should be sweet. And yeah, if everything seems to be going well, but there was two things we think could have happened that could have caused it. The one, I've been doing a lot of glute strength work that could have contributed, but the other one was I've just recently started running with a camel pack, and purely because I've got this hernia that's like a golf ball that sticks out and below the waistline, and generally when I run, I would run with a fuel belt, and either the bottles or my phone in the fuel belt is just banging up against my hernia, and it gets so painful, and it becomes so swollen, it gets stuck, and it's been getting worse, unfortunately for me. But the amount of times I have to lie down on the ground to push it back in, which on a side story, if I can make this completely about me. On a side story, I was out running a couple of weeks back, and you know, I was running in an Ironman finisher shirt, and you know, because you got to run in your Ironman finisher shirt, because how are the people going to realize that you're better than them unless you've got your Ironman finisher shirt on? But my fuel belt was just banging up against my hernia, and I couldn't push it back in because it's just swollen, stuck. So I'll lie on the ground and get it back in. And so I'm lying on this ground in this park area, trying to get this thing in, and this thing's bloody stuck. And I'm thinking, God's sake, the doctor did warn me that this could happen at any given time, and then she's all over Red Rover, it's straight to the hospital for an operation. And I thought, and I'm down on the ground for like 5 minutes here, trying to get this bloody hernia back inside me. And I thought, right, I think I'm done here. This is the day that the doctors warned me on. And so as I'm down on the ground, this runner jogs past me, and he looks down, and I'm just thinking, I look like the biggest muppet right now. It looks like I'm completely exhausted and I need a rest here. And finally, I get this bloody hernia back in, and I start running again. And I'm trotting along, and I pass this guy again, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if he thought, if you just started pacing yourself properly, you may not need to lie down halfway through a run. And it's not like I was flying or anything, and it's not like he was going super slow. It's like I was probably running 5 minute K pace, which would probably make him 550, 540 pace, somewhere around there. So we're not talking huge differences, but it was, I felt like a complete muppet. But I've completely gone. That's right. So since that particular moment, I've started wearing a fuel belt so it doesn't bang up against my hernia, and so that extra pressure up in and around the back, I think, caused the piriformis to be stressed, causing the sciatic nerve to activate. But two days ago, I'm at the physio, and he says we'll do some dry needling. And I thought, beauty, every time I've had dry needling, it just works. I just love dry needling. Anyway, and my son's there with me, and because we're going to go to the physio straight into the pool, and so he's putting 7 centimeter dry needles into, you know, in and around the glute, piriformis, and it was uncomfortable going in, and he does it all, but then he can't bloody leave these needles alone. He's moving them in and out and sideways and round, and I mean, wasn't painful, though there was a few painful moments, but it was just wildly uncomfortable. I'm just thinking, God's sake, mate, can you please stop that? And I couldn't sell it, because recently my son had a knot, this huge knot in his shoulder, and I'm operating on it, so I call it. I'm diving my thumbs into it, and after it, I'm cupping, and he's going, oh, and I said, mate, stop complaining. You'll be right. It hurts, but stop complaining. And he's like that. And he goes, what do you want me to do? And I said, Matt, I want you to be a man and I want you to eat the pain. And that's all I could think about. I'm thinking, God's sake, my son's here watching me get this needle poking in and out and round and round. I just want to complain. I just want to just say, for God's sake, mate, stop it. But because a couple of weeks prior I've told my son to be a man and eat the pain, I'm just going to have to eat this discomfort. God's sake. Anyway, I still can hardly walk from this bloody dry needling and him operating, but my calf hasn't played up once since then, not once. So I've got two more appointments next week with him, but he said I don't think he needs to see me, so that's nice. So long story short, not a calf strain. So I'm happy. I'm really happy. But anyway, today's question comes from Paul. Finally, after 10 minutes of making the show all about me, Paul writes, I have decided to start training for my first 70.3. I have 6 months to train for this race and would like to, and easy for me to read, and would like to do well at this race. How would you structure a training week? I have around 12 hours a week to train for this. Congratulations doing a 70.3. This will depend greatly on your goals and what the course looks like, and you know your strength and weaknesses, blah 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 blah. You got 6 months to train for it. I don't know what your background is, whether you've been doing triathlons or endurance sports for 30 years, or whether you're just coming straight off the couch. So all this will depend greatly, but I can give some numbers or give some info. So if you look at if your goal is to do to qualify for the world championships, for the 70.3 world championships and win your age group, you might struggle at 12 hours of training a week. There's you'd want to be one of those thoroughbreds or have a really really good background in the sport, and so you don't need those amount of hours. Or it also depends greatly on age and stuff too. But so if we're talking about 12 hours a week, most of those hours are going to come for most people on the weekend. So we're talking about your long bike ride Saturday, for instance, and a long run Sunday. So let's just say your long bike ride's 4 hours, your long run's 2 hours. Well, there's 6 hours. That's half your training week and done in two days. Now the rest you're going to be adding through the weekday. So for instance, let's call you go swim Monday, Wednesday, Friday, for example, and each swim session is going to be roughly around an hour's worth of work in the water. Depends on the pace, your pace you normally swim at. That could be anywhere between 2Ks to 4Ks worth of swimming there. For your average person, you could easily get about 3Ks done in an hour for your average person. And then you'll be looking at, let's say, a bike ride Tuesday and Thursday for an example. And let's say if you run Wednesday, Friday, and you want to do gym work, say Tuesday, Thursday, you're well over 12 hours worth of training for the week. That'd be like 14, 15 hours of training. That's with 3 swims, 3 bike rides, 3 runs, and 2 gym sessions. And that's not... So my point being, it starts going over. So for instance, working on that theory, Monday's swim session might be a good endurance session. Just clocking up the miles, nothing hard. If you think you're swimming easy, go a little bit easier just to be on the safe side. you Tuesday bike ride be a key session, whatever you're trying to target, whether you're targeting VO2, targeting strength work, targeting something else. So you've got your key session, key bike ride for about an hour on Tuesday. Let's say you do a 40-minute gym session or a 45-minute gym session, strength session. Wednesday's swim might be a threshold swim session, followed by let's say a key run session in the afternoon after it, for about an hour. Thursday you might do another key bike ride, but it depends on what you're trying to target within that training block. But let's call that an hour. And then that evening you're back in the, you know, doing another 40 minutes worth of strength work. Or 40, 45 minutes worth of strength work. Friday, you might only, you know, just do a swim. Let's call it a strength endurance swim session. So you're covering all bases within the week of swimming. Friday, you do a long bike ride. And Sunday, you do a long run. Well, that's 14 and a half thereabouts worth of training there. And so you start thinking, right, I haven't got 14 and a half hours. I've only got 12 hours. What can I compromise to get this training in? And so you start looking, right, well, maybe I can lower my long bike ride a little bit and add a brick run off it. So instead of doing a 4-hour bike ride, you're doing a 3-hour 20 bike ride with a 40-minute run off it. So you're no longer doing that run on Friday, for instance. And then you start, you know, how old are you? How strong are you naturally? Strength work. I'm a big fan of strength, like gym work. But clearly, if time you can't get to the gym twice a week or once a week or whatever, do you start looking at alternatives? Because let's face it, we can easily say let's lose a swim session or let's lose a bike ride or let's lose a run or whatever to get our gym work in. But the thing about triathlons is it's very easy to lose the meat and potato of the triathlons, which is swim, bike, run. That you know, if you want to get good at that, you got to do swim, bike, run. And so you look at, do I get strength work in through the actual training? So that's a lot of low gear work, paddles on the swim, running hills that can contribute to that, and maybe do add some small couple of small core sessions in. So for instance, if you're looking at 12 hours, you'd be looking, let's say you keep your swims, as I just mentioned, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for about an hour. You got Tuesday, Thursday bike rides in key sessions. You don't want to waste those, but you also want to use them as, you know, what you're trying to target. You might do a key run Wednesday, and then on that Saturday, Sunday, say Saturday, you do like a three and a half hour bike ride, and then you do a run off that bike. So you're getting value out of that bike. And at first, it might be just starting off easy, run off the bike, and slowly build to aerobic, and then you can start adding a little bit of spice into that. And then on Sunday, you've got a long run, 2-hour long run, for instance, and that'd be about a 12. That'd be the skeleton, as Chris McCormack calls it, the skeleton week. And then within that week, you're changing the sessions in and around what you're trying to target. So, if it's aerobic fitness, for instance, well, a couple of things have come to us recently where people have got this naturally high heart rate, and they've asked, what do they, you know, got to do to lower that heart rate? There's no quick fix with that. That's a lot of hours of aerobic training, years. And I don't think, I've had this conversation to about 3 different people in the last few months, of this exact conversation. And unfortunately, there is no quick fix there. You're looking at literally years of aerobic work to get that right. It could. Yeah, you know, maybe you need to improve your VO2. Maybe you need to improve your strength work on the bike or on the run, or maybe you need to improve, you know, whatever it is. I like to break everything down into 4 week blocks, 4 week training blocks, and target something and focus. You hone in on that. As you get close to the race day, a lot of your training is based around the demands on that event, and hoeing in on those intensities that you're going to be, you know, hopefully achieving. But yeah, but 6 months is going to fly past real hard, real fast. So don't you know, we are feeling a bit tired today. I'll worry about it tomorrow. I got plenty of time. No, it's a thing I bang on a bit. To a few athletes, if you see these people with momentum, I originally got this theory from Adam O'Brien, Newcastle Knights coach, who says if you want momentum, it happens in the off season, and it just snowballs. Just you just start off with just doing, you know, for anything. You're coming off the couch, you start walking, 5 minutes, and then the next week, now you're walking 10 minutes, and then the week after, and you can't look too far up the road. You can't be looking, well, geez, just for me to do a marathon, it's going to be about 3 years' time. But you just start snowballing this momentum, and momentum just starts, you know, because through consistency and through structure, and before you know it, you're looking back, you're thinking, God's sake, look where I'm at now. And people have no idea. They look back thinking, geez, he's going well at the moment. And it's not because I'm going well at the moment. It's because of what I've done in the last year or two. So yeah, don't waste a day, mate. Anyway, if you guys have any other questions, jump on through to the website, trainsmooth.com. Until next episode. Hooray.